So, as most of you probably know, but maybe not everybody, that during the last week we began the month of Karti, which is the month of Dhammadhara. And traditionally during this month, we worship Lord Dhammadhara, the Lord in his form of Dhammadhara, who has been bound by the around the abdomen with the ropes of Mother Yasoda, and it is during this month that we daily recite prayers to Lord Dhammadhara from the Dhammadharastakam, which is from the Padma Purana, which very nicely describes the pastime surrounding this word Dhammadhara, how Krishna is bound by the ropes of Mother Yasoda. And we thought it would be appropriate, since it is the month of Dhammadhara, to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter of Mother Yasoda binds Lord Krishna. We're reading from the commentaries by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, from his translation and commentary of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam called Sarata Darshini. These commentaries were actually gleaned by Srila Prabhupada himself when he gave his commentaries, his own commentaries in Srimad Bhagavatam. He'd taken made his commentaries from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, from Sanatana Goswami, and other Vaishnava Acharyas, and he also added his own commentary as well. You may ask why am I not reading from that. I'm reading from this commentary because there are some things here that Srila Prabhupada left out of his commentaries, although his commentaries are perfect and complete. But there are some things here that are additionally nice to hear about this particular pastime of Mother Yasoda binding Lord Krishna. And I was just going to read and the verses themselves and speak a little bit in summary of the different commentaries that were given in relationship to these verses. First, although before I begin reading, I would like to share something I was reading a little bit earlier today from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which helps to set the mood of understanding the pastimes of Lord Krishna in Vrindavan. Certainly, it is very high subject matter. They're not just simply stories that we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but they're actual eternal pastimes, lilas or pastimes of the Supreme Lord when he manifests himself in this world. Once in every day of Lord Brahma, he appears in each and every universe and he manifests his eternal pastimes, which are eternally displayed in the transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavan. And when Krishna appears in each universe, he displays his loving reciprocal relationships with his eternal associates in order to attract the conditioned souls to his eternal realm, transcendental realm. Sometimes when we can consider conception of God, but we may not have a full or complete understanding of how is God manifest in his most complete form. Sometimes people have a conception of God as being a controller or a very powerful, the most powerful, all-powerful living being, or the most opulent, most wealthy. Of course, Krishna is one who displays six opulences: his wealth, his fame, his intelligence, his beauty, his strength, and his renunciation. These are some of the opulences of the Supreme Lord. But the most complete understanding, the most complete conception, is that the Lord manifested all of his opulences in full only in the transcendental realm of Vrindavan. It is described that the transcendental abode of Shri Vrindavan Dham is like an unlimited ocean, where the Lord displays all His opulences, His transcendental opulences. Whereas the opulences of like of Vaikuntha and the opulences of Dwarka, not even compared to even be a drop of that ocean. When we think of opulence, naturally we always think of wealth. That's a natural conception when we ever discuss opulences. As a person is very opulent, means he lives a very wealthy lifestyle. He's well-to-do. He has a lot of possessions. He has a lot of money. He has so many assets that make him appear to be very opulent. But actually, the Lord has many features. He has his features which are displayed in the realm of Vaikuntha, where the Lord is actually seen as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Being, and is worshipped with great awe and reverence. And there He is worshipped in great opulence, great wealth, majestic, as the word majestic is used in specifically in relationship to the worship of the Lord in the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, where there are many opulent palaces, and the Supreme Lord is the supreme predominating being of that of those kingdoms, of those transcendental planets of Vaikuntha. And the residents of those planets worship the Lord in awe, being awestruck by his powerful position, just like we may be awestruck by the powerful position of a personality who's the president of a country, or who may have so much at his command, the chief commander of the army, commander-in-chief. He may be in control, may have so many different powers. So the same way the Supreme Lord manifests His opulences in the Vaikuntha realm as the chief predominating deity and is worshipped in this form as honored reverence. However, it's described that the Lord is most complete in His display of opulences in Vrindavan, even more complete than in the realm of Vaikuntha. And as I was reading today, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was describing how Krishna manifests His opulences in this way, and he was quoting in reference to one verse from the Brahma Samhita, which describes the opulences of the natural forests of Vrindavan, the natural minerals and the leaves and the flowers, and the cows, the Kamadhenu cows, which provide an unlimited supply of milk, which is desired by everyone. They consider this to be real opulence, and the forest provides simply flowers, which are used for decorating the body of the Supreme Lord and decorating the devotees of the Lord. And the minerals which are used for decorating the Supreme Lord. And of course the Lord, as we see oftentimes, see a picture of Him. He is wearing a peacock feather, and He is wearing the gunja garland around His, and by Jayanti garland around His neck. And these are the real opulences of Vrindavan. And because the Lord is the source, and also it's described that the soil, the surface of Vrindavan is transcendental touchstone, which is the source of all the Chitamani jewels which are manifest, the source of all opulence of the world. And the gopis are considered to be far superior than the goddesses of fortune who are manifest in Vrindavan. Manifest in Vaikuntha. The gopis in Vrindavan are considered to be far superior. The Lord, who is the possessor of all of these opulences, He displays His full opulences, most complete, in Vrindavan, because He displays Himself as a subordinate to the love of His eternal associates. This is considered to be His greatest opulence, known as Bhaktivatsalya. Although He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Being, who is worshipped by great awe and reverence, who is worshipped by hundreds and thousands and millions of prayers given in the Vedic literatures, is worshipped in this mood, but nonetheless, although he is the Supreme Lord, in the transcendental realm of Vrindavan, he displays his greatest opulence by allowing himself to be controlled by the love of his eternal associates, the residents of Goloka Vrindavan, and subordinates himself completely to them, and is completely controlled by their loving attitude or their relationship that they have towards Krishna, either as a friend or as a parent or a lover. So this is, although Krishna is the possessor of all opulences, his greatest manifestation of opulences is this position that he takes in this transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavan, which is transferred or manifested in every universe. We talk about opulences. He is the original source, the creator of unlimited universes, of which this universe is only one. It's compared to be that this universe is like a mustard seed in a bucket of mustard seeds. It's one mustard seed in a bucket of mustard seeds. It's very insignificant. Yet, the Lord, Krishna, from his transcendental body, is emanating unlimited universes. And in each universe, there is a predominating predominating deities, who are Lord Brahma, who is the creator of the universe, Lord Vishnu, who is the maintainer, who is an expansion of Krishna, and Lord Shiva, who is the destroyer of each universe. And all these things actually are coming from Krishna. Krishna is the original. Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. He is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. As described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, all of these expansions of the Supreme Personality of God, are the portions or plenary portions of, but Lord Sri Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of them appear whenever there are disturbances created by the atheists. The Lord appears to protect his devotees. Ete chang sakala puksa krishna stu bhagavan swayam indrari vyakulam lokam vidayanti yuge yuge. So that Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan, the primeval cause of all causes, as described by Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadya Arya Govinda Savakarana Karana. He is Para Ishvara, the Supreme Controller. That is one of his manifestations, his features as the Supreme Controller. He is Satchidananda Vigraha. He is an eternal form, full of knowledge and bliss. He is the original and primeval person in Sarvakarana Karana. He is the cause of all causes. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, what does he do? Where does he live? What are his activities? Is he just simply some power, some controller, some source? Or is there a more complete understanding of the Supreme Lord? And that more complete understanding is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam as a personality. Srila Prabhupada uses the terms Supreme Personality of Godhead, specifically to emphasize and to help us to understand that we speak about the primeval cause of all causes, and we're speaking about the original primeval person. The cause of all causes means that original source from which everything else is manifest. Sometimes people ask the question, well, who created Krishna? And then, of course, as we understand that, because naturally people think that everything has a creation, everything has a beginning, everything has a cause. It's very difficult to conceive or to understand a person who has no cause, who is eternally manifest, and never was there a beginning. Advaita Machuta Vinayam Ananta Rupam, as described in the Brahma Samhita, that Krishna's body is non-dual, it's not subject to decay. He is the original, supreme, primeval person. He is the beginning of, his body is beginless. He's Nava Yovanam, he's an ever-fresh youth. His body is endless, it's never subject to decay. His body is the beginning of everything. So the answer to who created Krishna is obviously is Krishna is the original supreme, from whom everything else is manifest. And if somebody created Krishna, then that would be Krishna. So, therefore, we come to the end. the end of the line when we actually we speak about Krishna. Of course, Krishna's his pastimes and his qualities and his characteristics, they're inconceivable to our mundane mind, but they can be realized when one purifies the mind and the senses through transcendental sound vibration of chanting Hare Krishna, and by hearing transcendental sound vibration, which is the emanating originally from the Supreme Lord Himself. By hearing transcendental sound vibration, then gradually the heart is cleansed, and when the heart is cleansed, the senses become purified, then one gradually achieves transcendental realization, which is realization means it's not no longer theoretical, but it's been realized, it's understood, it's been revealed ultimately by Krishna, who is the control of that potency which caused us to forget and to lose sight of Him in the first place. So when we speak about Krishna, a revelation or a realization, that means that Krishna is simply removing the covering. He's removing that illusory curtain which has caused us to forget our eternal relationship with Krishna, which has caused us to look at this world as what we think as real. And when we hear the descriptions of pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one who is conditioned, he may think that they're simply narrations, or they're fictional. But a Vaishnava, of one who has some faith, and having awakened that faith and hearing the narrations of the Supreme Lord, is one whose faith has been awakened, and that faith, which is based upon hearing sound vibration, after it's been awakened, gradually what it does is it gives Rajavidya Rajabhuyam Pavichamitam Uttamam Pachikshavagamam Ganyam Shushukam Kartam Avyam. It gives direct perception of the self by realization. It is the perfection of religion. That is this king, Rajavidya, the king of knowledge, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Just as we oftentimes quote the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes that devotion, direct perception of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from material things. These three things come simultaneously for a person who's engaged in devotional service, in the same way as pleasure and nourishment and relief from hunger come simultaneously and increasingly with each bite for a person who's eating. So when a person is eating, he gets direct experience. He doesn't have to ask somebody else, does this taste good? He doesn't have to ask somebody else, is my hunger going away? He doesn't have, these are directly perceived, it's a direct experience with each bite, by eating. He feels some nourishment, gets some strength, he experiences some pleasure, and he sees that his hunger is going away with each bite. So these three things of pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger, in comparison to eating, is compared to a person who's actually engaged in devotional service. He experiences his devotion will increase. He sees that he gets direct perception of God in his life, and sees that how actually God, the Supreme Lord, is definitely an integral part of his life, and how he reveals himself in so many different ways in our life, and he sees that his detachment decreases. Then a person knows that he's following a process which is actually bringing about this transcendental reality, because that illusory covering, that illusion is gradually being eradicated and washed away. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, since this divine nature of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. He said, but anyone who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond. So Krishna says, Mama Maya, it is my Maya. It is my illusory covering that I have created. I have created so to allow the living entity, if he so desires, to forget about my transcendental pastimes, my transcendental abode, my transcendental associates. If the living entity wishes to forget, then Mama Maya, my Maya, will cover him. Naham Pakasha Shavasha Yoga Maya Savavita. Krishna says, I am never manifest to those who are foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya. So the whole world knows me not when I'm born in infallible. So, therefore, realization is experienced directly for a person who is actually engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And then what happens is that one's faith is awakened by coming in contact with Krishna, either by coming in contact with His name, coming in contact with the narrations of His pastimes, coming in contact with His devotees. That faith is awakened, and then once that faith is awakened, then it's up to us to take some initiative ourselves in order to increase that faith by applying whatever little faith that we have, that we've gained, we obtained in the sublime process, which is given by the Lord Himself as a means for self-realization in each and every age. The Lord reveals a method by which He can be achieved in an age of Kali. In the age, Kali is compared to be like an ocean of all bad qualities, but it has one good quality that by chanting Hare Krishna, one can achieve Bhukta Sangha Param Vajet, the supreme liberation. So, this is a little introduction. Because in order to enter directly into and speak about the transcendental leelas of the Lord, which are most fully manifest in the realm of Vrindavan, we thought we should preface it a little bit by speaking about just what are these pastimes. They are the activities of the Supreme Lord which evoke His eternal pleasure. Three aspects of the Lord are Sat, Chit, and Ananda. He's eternal, He's full of knowledge, and He feels ever-increasing bliss. How does the Lord experience bliss? What does He enjoy? Does he enjoy by having a big bank account and by building a mansion for Himself in Greenwich, Connecticut, or somewhere down in Florida? I mean, what does the Lord do to enjoy? These things, of course, are insignificant. This is all the universe, unlimited universes are insignificant to the Lord in comparison to the opulences of that transcendental realm of Vrindavan. They're insignificant. They're just simply a playground for the living entities who want to try to play out an imitation activity of the Supreme Lord. When the Lord wishes to enjoy, when is always enjoying, as we said, He's the Purusha, He's the eternal enjoy. We use the word when only because we have to think in that concept of when. Our tendency is to think when something happens, there is a beginning for it. But actually, the Lord is eternally enjoying. But sometimes we have to use the word when. But when the Lord enjoys, what does He enjoy? He enjoys not this temporary world, but He enjoys with His eternal associates. And how does the Lord enjoy? He enjoys because He does exactly what He wants to do. He is independent. He's Swarat. He is independent. He can do whatever He wants, and He's not bound by the laws of material nature in the same way that the conditioned souls who are forced to take repeated birth and death in this world are bound. They have to accept the reactions to their activities, their karma, and they have to accept the results, and therefore they are struggling hard with material nature. But Krishna doesn't struggle with the laws of material nature. But we will see in this particular pastime that Krishna does struggle in a different way. He struggles from the behavior of His mother as He tries to avoid being captured by her and being beaten by her and being bound by a rope by her. Krishna struggles to avoid. In fact, it is very interesting in the very first verse, which I'll read, or the Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, "One day when Mother Yashoda saw that all the maidservants were engaged in other household affairs, she personally began to churn the yogurt. While churning, she remembered the childish activities of Krishna, and in her own way she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities." We'll speak about this. But one thing that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states in his commentary in connection to being bound, he says, "You bind up the people who are engulfed in theft, anger, and other low qualities. and make them cry. Now you, who have become implicated in theft, overwhelmed with anger, and bound up by your soda, are crying. So, as we said, Krishna doesn't have to struggle. Certainly he doesn't struggle with material nature. It acts completely according to his desires, and he doesn't have to struggle in any way in the matter of creation, maintenance, or annihilation of this temporary bhasa manifestation. But we still we see that when the Lord displays his opulences, he shows how he has to struggle in his dealings with his mother, who is trying to obstruct him from his liberty. He is one of Krishna's opulences, is that he's a thief, the transcendental thief. And by his thievery, what does he do? He awakens the pleasure of the residents of Vrindavan. He captures their attention. Just as when a child, I mean, any one of us who has seen the behavior of a young child knows that the child is very expert and they know how to get attention. Just especially they know when they're center of attention, right? When they know when they've got everybody's attention. And what are the first thing they start doing? They usually start doing some mischief so they can keep that attention focused on them. Right? And everybody starts talking about them, even though the child may play innocent or doesn't know that everybody's watching them. But still, the child is, it's inherent to the child, right? To perform mischievous activities to get everybody's attention. So, where does that come from? It comes from Krishna. Because Krishna actually has the same inherent propensities, but Krishna happens to be the Supreme Lord. And what happens when he captures the attentions of the residents of Vrindavan? It increases their affection towards Krishna. Whatever particular affection they may have, either affection, they may see Krishna as their child, which is one of the relationships, or rasas, that which the devotees of Vrindavan have with Krishna, a parental affection. Or Krishna may try to capture the attention of his friends who have a relationship with Krishna as their friend. And certainly, Krishna does it in so many different ways to capture their attention. So just as a mischievous child tries to capture attention, to draw attention to himself, in the same way the Supreme Lord displays mischievous activities which are actually meant to draw attention to him. Why is that? Why does he want to do that? Because that attention increases that particular affectionate relationship the devotee has with Krishna. When the parent thinks of Krishna as a child, just like Prabhupada gives that example we oftentimes use, when a parent is in love with a child, then when a parent sees the shoe of a child, it's not an ordinary shoe to the parent. The parent immediately makes the connection between the shoe and the child. Or if the parent hears the voice of a child at a distance, it's not just simply some voice screaming in the distance. Immediately the connection is made, because the background is that relationship the parent has with the child. Or the parent sees the toy of the child, immediately they see the child. That is the nature of love. So similarly, the residents of Vrindavan, they love Krishna. They're always thinking about Krishna. And what does Krishna do to capture their attention? One of the things he does, he displays mischievous activities. Another thing he does is he plays his flute. We were just reading this morning in Chaitanya Charitamrita. An example was given how when Krishna plays his flute, for the residents of Vrindavan, it's like they're compared to be like a bird entering into the ears of the residents of Vrindavan and building a nest in the ears and singing in the ears. If a bird goes into your ear and builds a nest in your ear and they're always singing, you can't think of anything else except that bird singing in your ear. So, an example is given on Krishna plays his flute. All the residents of Vrindavan immediately captivated by the sound of that flute. The cows, the calves, even if they're drinking the milk from the cows, the calves, they stop drinking. Their activities are suspended. Their ears, they immediately go up and they're listening to that sound of Krishna's flute. And the gopis, when they hear Krishna's flute, they think that Krishna is calling them. And Krishna's parents hear Krishna's flute off in the distance in the pasture ground. Immediately, also, their love is awakened for Krishna. So, one of the things Krishna does to attract people's attention is he plays a flute. It's a beautiful sound. Most beautiful sound that one can imagine. Prabhupada said in the commentary we were reading this morning that actually the chanting of Hare Krishna, when one chants Hare Krishna, he says it's compared to be like the sound of Krishna's flute. And capturing, we should be chanting in such a way that it engulfs us and captures our attention in the chanting of the holy name. Of course, our tendency is that this, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, is like background music in the store. We're more interested in what's on the shelf, and the background music is simply there. But actually, for a person who's awakened some attraction for the holy name of the Lord, then he actually begins to experience Krishna fully manifesting himself in his name. He sees Krishna non-different from his name, experiences Krishna non-different from his name. And as described by Rupa Goswami, he says that these two syllables, Krishna, when chanted, then when he desires millions of tongues and millions of ears, and when it enters into the courtyard of the heart and starts dancing, then the mind becomes stunned, the senses become inert. He describes this is the result of chanting these two syllables, Krishna. So, the sound of Krishna's flute, this is another way that Krishna captures the attention of the residents of Vrindavan. And immediately, they are seeing Krishna, they're remembering Krishna. And this is the actual perfectional stage of life. This is the stage which is of life which is experienced by the residents of Vrindavan. They don't know anyone except Krishna. And they never think of Krishna as the Supreme Lord, but they only think of Krishna in terms of the relationship they have with Krishna. And Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my child, Krishna is my lover. And if you try to say anything contrary to that, then the devotee will not be able to, as Uddhava tried to do with Nanda Maharaj when he tried to tell him, why are you lamenting? Don't you know your son is God? And Nanda Maharaj challenged him, how can you make such a statement about my son? How can my son be God? My son carries my shoes on his head. How can he be God? But God is the supreme truth, but my son always lies all the time about his stealing butter. How can you say he's God? You know, he in other words, Nanda Maharaj can never think it this way, that he simply thinks, that's my son. How can you say such a thing about my son? So that's the conception they have. That's their bhav. That's their love. You know, and that's how they think. And that's what controls Krishna. Krishna becomes so controlled by that love that he becomes so subordinate to the love that he even enjoys by thinking himself as a son, as a friend, or as a lover. And he also even becomes so covered by that power of their love that he also forgets his own divinity. Such is the power of prema. This is considered to be the most powerful. This is how the Lord is controlled, ultimately. He's controlled by love. And what is its fullest manifestation? Its fullest manifestation is unalloyed love, which is devoid of karma, devoid of jnana, devoid of any fruitive desire for personal gain, devoid of any desire for liberation, or relief from suffering. But the highest form of love is simply the desire to please Krishna. That is the highest form of love, with no other motivation. That is real love. And because they have no other desire except the desire to please Krishna, Krishna allows himself to become controlled by that love. And therefore he allows himself to become controlled by the love of Mother Yasoda. One day Mother Yasoda, what is the nature of her love? She is engaged in household affairs, and she's churning the yogurt into butter. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in his commentary that Mother Yasoda decided that, said she was personally going to do it because she had found out some particular cows that were grazing on the most fragrant grasses, so fragrant with the grasses that these cows were grazing on, that the fragrance from the grass went into the milk. And she found a few cows which were grazing on these most fragrant grasses, and she decided she personally herself would go and she would take the milk from those cows and she would churn the yogurt from that milk into butter for Krishna. So she's the queen of Vrindavan. She doesn't have to churn butter. But why is she doing it? She doesn't have to. She's the queen of Vrindavan. She has so many others who can churn the butter, but she personally wants to do it because of her love for Krishna. So she was churning this butter, and while she was churning the yogurt into butter, and while she was doing this, she was actually singing songs about the activities of her child. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the ladies of Raj poeticized all of Krishna's childhood activities. Having collected all these songs, Mother Jasoda began to sing these songs in order to pacify her longing to see Krishna, who was sleeping in another room. So she was singing songs about her son. Prabhupada explains in one commentary in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that in Vedic times, sometimes people, when they want to remember something or someone, they'll take some of their activities and bring it to a poet, and they'll have it poeticized. Or they'll either put it to poetry themselves, or they'll bring it to a poet and have it poeticized, so they can repeat it again and again, so they can remember. So in the same way, Mother Jasoda, she was singing songs about what she had personally observed in the behavior of her young child, Krishna. And while she was churning the yogurt into butter, she was singing about Krishna. And what does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say? In the next verse, it's described. I'm never going to be able to read all these verses. I don't even know if I'm going to get to the full Damodar Leela. But we're going to read the translation of Damodar Astakam, which will give us the essence of Damodar Leela. But the next verse, Shukadeva Goswami describes Mother Jasoda's characteristics. She's dressed in a saffron yellow sari with a belt tied about her full hips. Mother Jasoda pulled on the churning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and malati flowers were falling from her hair. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse presents the ideal of motherly affection for Krishna. Anyone interested in cultivating vatsalya bhava, or parental love, should meditate upon the bodily form, qualities, features, and affection of Mother Jasoda described. In other words, this is the nature of Mother Jasoda's love. She's laboring intensively. Who is she laboring for? She's laboring to make butter for Krishna. And while she's laboring to make butter for Krishna, Krishna happens to come by. Krishna's in the other room. He's sleeping. And then he wakes up from his sleeping state. And he comes to Mother Jasoda, and he indicates to Mother Jasoda that he wants her attention. So what does he do? He grabs the churning rod and holds it so Mother Jasoda can churn the butter, the yogurt into butter. Because Krishna wants motherly attention for Mother Jasoda in this way. And Mother Jasoda, then she takes Krishna, she places him on her lap, she offers her breast milk to her son, another manifestation of motherly affection. And then she notices that on the stove, the milk, which she was also not making for herself, obviously, she was also making that milk for Krishna. The milk was boiling over. So someone may say, why would Mother Jasoda, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, how could Jasoda show so much interest in the boiling milk that she left Krishna unsatisfied and hungry? Jasoda was so concerned for what Krishna would eat and drink that she could temporarily ignore Krishna. But then only those who are under the sway of fame can understand or talk about the remarkable actions of one impelled by pure love for Krishna. No one else can understand these manners. So, of course, we can try to understand. But Mother Yashoda was actually, she was thinking, that's Krishna's milk also on the stove. So she thought, certainly, how can I let milk, Krishna's milk, boil over on the stove? I can put him down for a moment, get the milk, and come back and then continue. But for Krishna, it was another way of capturing attention, as he does by his mischievous behavior. Krishna, actually, although he is personification of peace, he became angry. So, of course, it is display of his bhakta vatsalya, the way that he reciprocates with his devotees. Sometimes Krishna appears to act in contradictory ways. In one commentary, I'll describe this. This is a little bit farther ahead, but in one commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives many examples how Krishna appears to act in contrary ways. He's one thing, but yet he does something else. He said, by his very nature, Krishna is self-satisfied, Atmaram, yet he suffers from hunger. He's aptakama. Aptakama means automatically fulfills all his desires. Yet he is dissatisfied and desirous of prema, or love. Though Krishna is the personification of peace and pure goodness, he becomes angry. Krishna is the master of the goddess of fortune. Yet he steals butter like a beggar. Though Krishna instills fear in all through time and death, he flees in fear of Yashoda's stick. Though Krishna travels at the speed of mind, he's easily caught by the firm grip of his mother. Though Krishna is condensed bliss, sandranani, he cries in sorrow. Though Krishna is unlimited and all-pervading, he is limited by being tied up. So he gives these different examples which help us to understand that although Krishna is God and he is unlimited, all-powerful, personification of peace, and all these other qualities is here personified, everyone is afraid of time. Time destroys everything, as Krishna says, Tadosmi, I am time, and I come to destroy everything in the form of time. So, although everyone is fearful of Krishna, yet Krishna runs in fear, or flees in fear, when Mother Yashoda comes after Krishna, when she chases him with her stick to punish him for doing what he did when Mother Yashoda put him down when she went to get the milk. When she went to get the milk on the stove, Krishna became angry. Why did she put me down? I wasn't satisfied. I hadn't been fully satisfied. So he decided he picked up a stone and he broke open the clay pot. And Mother Yashoda was churning the yogurt into butter. And then he went into the other room where the butter was stored. And he reached in, he took down the butter, and he began mischievously distributing the contents of the butter pot to his friends and to the monkeys. He went, he sat down upon a grinding mortar. He sat on that and he called all his friends to come, and the monkeys all came. Krishna sat there all the time looking around to make sure that nobody was running up to catch him, because he was afraid that Yashoda might catch him, as she sometimes would do. And even one time Krishna was caught stealing butter, and Krishna told Mother Yashoda, actually, it was the bracelet on my arm was burning from the jewels that were on it, and I put my hand in the butter to cool it off. So Krishna would make up stories in this way because he wanted to avoid, you know, being caught and potentially being punished for his mischievous behavior. So Krishna was sitting on top of the grinding mortar, distributing the contents. Mother Yashoda, who had gone in to get the milk on the stove, she comes out of the house. She sees all the mischief. She sees the broken pot, the contents of the pot all over the ground. She goes in the other room. She sees all the other pots. Some of them have been broken. All the parts are thrown on the ground. Footprints everywhere on the ground. Miss Krishna was running through the water, and then she looks out from inside the house and she sees there's her son sitting on the grinding board distributing. So when Mother Jasoda sees this, she comes, she approaches Krishna. Krishna sees her, immediately gets down off the grinding water and begins to run in fear. Mother Jasoda picks up a stick and begins chasing. Krishna tells Mother Jasoda, "Mother, what are you doing? Stop right there. You're getting any closer. If you think I engaged in mischief, just watch the kind of mischief I'll do if you get any closer." And she said, "Mother Jasoda said, you're so scared of being punished, then why did you break the pot?" And Krishna said, "Oh, I promise I'll never do it again." He said that already so many times before. And Mother Jasoda, she knows. She's heard this before. She's already caught him so many times. And every time, he promises, "No, Mother, I won't do it. Either I didn't do it, or I won't do it again," or some other story. But Krishna does this because it increases and enhances the motherly affection of Mother Jasoda. She wants to have a child she can punish. She wants to have a child that she can nurture. She wants a child that she can feed and she can take care of. And just so happens that Krishna happens to be her child. And because she's so absorbed in Vatsalya Prema, whenever Krishna is in difficulty, when he's in trouble, whenever he's mischievous, she thinks like a mother. How can she think? How can she chase after him and punish him if he has to consider this is God? So this is the opulence of Vrindavan. And therefore it's described that the opulence is, Krishna displays his opulence in the most complete way in Vrindavan. In other realms, in Vaikuntha, in Dwarka, he is worshipped with awe and reverence, but in Vrindavan there is no awe and reverence. Everything is unalloyed love according to one's particular relationship that one has with Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates fully by being controlled by that love. So I kind of summarized the Leela, and as we said, there is much more to the pastime, but I've just tried to give a summary to help us meditate on the prayers that we'll be chanting this evening when we offer the lamp to Lord Damodar. At least when we look at Mother Jasoda, as she's attempting to bind, as we know, when she attempted to bind Krishna with a rope, what happened is that Krishna did something very wonderful. And then Mother Jasoda, when she tried to tie him to the wood grinding mortar, she found that the rope was 2 fingers too short. So she decided she would get more ropes in the house, and she tied them to the end of the first rope. And whenever she tried to bind Krishna, then she found that ropes were still 2 fingers too short. Krishna could not be bound. When all the gopis, the elderly gopis of Vrindavan, were watching this, and they said, "Jasoda, why are you struggling so hard to bind your son? Don't you realize that this is good fortune today that he will not be bound by you?" And Jasoda says to all the cowherd women, she said, "Actually, I want to see the extent of my son's waist. I'm not going to stop here. You go bring all the ropes in all of your houses, and I'm going to continue to tie them to the rope. And it's just so that I could see the extent of my son's waist." So she kept on adding rope after rope after rope in the whole village. And when Krishna saw the hard labor that Mother Jasoda was going through in an attempt to bind her, then Krishna manifested his mercy, his Kripa Shakti. Because of her hard labor and her strong desire, even though Krishna had a desire, he wanted to play, continue to play, and he wanted to continue to steal butter. He's God. Who could stop him? His devotee. His devotee can stop him. We say God is independent, but actually he displays in this pastime how he's not independent. Why was Mother Jasoda unable to bind him? Because Krishna wanted to continue to play, and he wanted to continue to steal butter. But he saw Jasoda's love and determination to bind him, his heart melted, and he manifested his mercy and allowed himself, being controlled and captured by that love of Jasoda, allowed himself to be bound. Therefore we say that Krishna is bound, but he can only be bound by one thing. He cannot be bound by the laws of material nature. He's always unbound. He's always transcendental to the laws of material nature, transcendental to the three modes of material nature, transcendental to this material world. He never comes under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Just as the sun never becomes covered by the clouds. So in the same way, Krishna never becomes contaminated by the three qualities of the three modes of material nature. Yet, he allows himself to become bound by love. That is the only most powerful force in this world, is love. So, wherever one sees such love, of course, well, one should aspire to obtain that love, because it's by that love that one can actually become released from the stringent laws of material nature. When Krishna orders the release, Krishna says, material nature is very difficult to overcome, but if you surrender to me, you can easily cross beyond it. Why? Because Krishna is the controller of material nature. And when he orders the release of the conditioned soul, then the conditioned soul can be easily released from the captivating illusory potency of the Supreme Lord. But by his own endeavors alone, it is not possible. Therefore, the devotee simply tries to capture Krishna's attention. Krishna is giving his attention to all his devotees and helping them to experience increasing their love. And the devotee, he is aspiring to capture the attention of the Lord. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to say that we should not, when we engage in devotional service, we should not do it in a way that we can see Krishna, but that we can be seen by Krishna. So this is the aspiration of a devotee, how to get Krishna's attention. It's not by our strength, it's not by our austerities, it's not by accepting vows. None of these things can catch the Lord's attention. The Lord's attention can only be aroused when he sees that one has love, when one has unalloyed, unflinching faith, the desire to please the Lord. This is how Jasoda bound Krishna, by her love. And this is the same way, by hearing these narrations and hearing descriptions, the same way we also can get Krishna's attention, by lending our ears and giving our tongues to discussing and hearing about these transcendental narrations, which are themselves are virtuous when properly heard and chanted. They cleanse the heart, and they enable us to actually gradually begin to realize what our eternal relationship actually is with Krishna. And that is the means for cutting the heart knot of material, of the modes of material nature. There is no other way to cut the knot which has bound us to this world. We sever the knot by transforming our consciousness from that which is temporary to that which is eternal. That is the essence of all the pastimes of the Lord. And therefore, by meditating on these pastimes and by worshipping the Lord in this form of Damodar, it can provide the inspiration and the necessary qualification for advancing along the path of devotional service and awakening our dormant love for Krishna, who manifests one of his forms in the form of Damodar, who we are worshipping in this month of Damodar Kartik, in this wonderful transcendental form. So I think we should stop here, and I guess it's time for Arti. Or should we see if there are any questions?
Yes, any questions?
Yes. Oh, a lot of questions. Who do we start? Okay,
Thank you. The narrations that you describe are unbelievably sweet. So the devotees would have naturally interest to, sometimes enter into the Leela. What is the scriptural instruction that how hard it is to enter? How hard it is to
hard?
Enter? Almost impossible.
There are many references, but we just quoted one from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says it's very difficult to overcome Maya, but one who surrenders to me can easily overcome. So what is our means of surrender, and especially in this age? Our means of surrender is by surrendering our ears and surrendering our tongue. The Lord has made himself very easily accessible. In the age of coming, which normally, under normal circumstances, is very difficult to obtain. In the age of Kali Yuga, the Lord has made it so easy to obtain by chanting. So we see this word easy in many scriptural references in relationship to chanting Hare Krishna. The Lord has actually provided dispensation for the residents of Kali Yuga, which previously was achieved by great fire sacrifices, previously was achieved in the age of Satya Yuga by performances of great austerities, but previously was achieved in Dwapara Yuga by very elaborate temple worship, is achieved in Kali Yuga by chanting Krishna's name. So, therefore, as we said, we oftentimes see the word easy in connection with chanting Hare Krishna. Why is chanting Hare Krishna difficult? Why is it so difficult? It actually shouldn't be difficult, but it becomes difficult if we're not careful in our chanting of Hare Krishna. If we're not careful, we commit offenses, and this is a whole subject in of itself. Offenses to the holy name, one loses attraction, loses his taste, but the holy name is very merciful. It is the most merciful manifestation of the Lord. And therefore, it's so merciful, one of the reasons why it's so merciful, because it is so accessible. Anyone who has a tongue can chant Krishna's name. But it requires some faith. It does require faith. How to get that faith? It becomes easier in the association with those who have faith. That's how it becomes easier. So if we actually want to make it easier for ourselves, we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll keep ourselves in the association of devotees who have faith. And then it becomes easier. And if we want to make it more difficult for ourselves, we'll surround ourselves by persons who have no faith. And then what happens? To that degree that we become attached to those things, to that degree our faith in Krishna and his name decreases. So we can make it easier for ourselves by at least taking those steps, by chanting, and by keeping association with those who inspire us to continue to chant. Then it becomes easier. That is the prescription which is given for the age of Kali Yuga, for this age, to make it easier to enter in. And the Lord is so merciful that he has come in this age to actually distribute Vajrapranam. He's made himself personally accessible and the service to him accessible through chanting Hare Krishna, by personally manifesting himself in his name. So, on one hand it seems very difficult, but the scriptures always use the word, and specifically in this age of Kali, use the word easy in connection to chanting. Yes?
I was wondering that when Yashoda Ma was tying Krishna and she was falling short of rope, didn't like it cross in her mind like a slight of doubt that why this is happening and well, if it was happening because Krishna may be God, or did Krishna forget that he was God and he was being playful? So I just had all these
Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that Krishna is so inconceivable that he can simultaneously forget that he's God and be fully cognizant of everything. It's inconceivable. But he has to be. He forgets, in the presence of his devotee, he forgets. But what about those devotees who are worshipping Krishna in that same affection throughout the entire creation? He has to be able to hear them and to be aware of them when they're worshipping him in that way. So although he's in the presence of his eternal associates who are there in the spiritual world, he becomes covered and he actually forgets. And this is confirmed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He describes it I can't remember the name of the book, but he gives the example of Queen Kunti in her prayers. Queen Kunti in her prayers to Lord Krishna, she says, when I see you crying and running in fear from the stick of Mother Jasoda, when I see this, it is very bewildering to me. And Queen Kunti is saying this. Now, Queen Kunti actually has Aishwarya Bam, Aishwarya Priya. Kunti knows Krishna's God. She's not a resident of Vrindavan. She's outside of Vrindavan. So she actually worships Krishna as the Supreme Lord. So in her prayers, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, she says, when I see you afraid of Mother Yasoda, she says, I become the stick of Mother Yasoda, I become bewildered. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Kunti Devi wouldn't be bewildered if she thought that Krishna was pretending to be afraid. It would all make perfect sense. Krishna's pretending to be afraid. That's not bewildering at all. He's God and he's pretending to be afraid. But she says she's bewildered. Why was she bewildered? She was bewildered because Krishna was genuinely afraid. And that was bewildering to her. So therefore, that's how she perceived it. That's how she saw it. That Krishna was... In the beginning, Krishna feigned. He's crying false tears. Right? It was his way of capturing Mother Yasoda's. When Krishna first jumped off the grinding water, he started rubbing his eyes, started feigning. But then that he was afraid. But then Mother Yasoda came after him with the stick and was getting closer. Real tears. Real tears. He was genuinely afraid. Now how could he think that he's God? It was for the devotees who understand the nature of praying, they don't think that way. They understand that Krishna was actually afraid. So he was afraid, but at the same time, he's always conscious of his devotees throughout the entire creation who are wanting, he's reciprocating with their prayers. And the way that they approach it. So he's simultaneously bewildered and all cognizant. So, and Mother Yasoda, she never thinks. It's described that the residents of Vrindavan, sometimes they may pretend, just like when Mother Yasoda looked in Krishna's mouth when she saw clay, she was, for a moment, immediately she was covered over. She starts wondering, is he some kind of powerful demigod? Is he? But it's described, and we answered this question, Priyari Mohanprabhu asked this question the day in class. It's described that the devotees who have ecstatic love for Krishna, their emotions are continuously going. Spiritual emotions. It's the nature of prema, of love. It's not devoid of emotion. The emotions we experience in this world is just perverted reflections of transcendental emotions which are manifested in the transcendental realm of Goloka. Only there is real love. Here, our emotions and anxiety, fear, attachment, all these things, they're just simply reflections of the real emotions that the devotees experience in the relationship to their love with Krishna. So their emotions are continuously going in different types of ecstatic feelings they feel. They're called anubhava, different types of experiences that it begin to experience. Sattvika bhavas within their body, the body begins to tremble, their perspiration comes, their emotions of love of God. So the example is given that these emotions are there. And the example is given that if you put a blade of grass in a pot of boiling milk, that the milk is continuously boiling, and sometimes the blade of grass will surface. But immediately, because the milk is continuously boiling, he won't see it on the top anymore. So in the same way, sometimes when these devotees are experiencing and feeling these emotions for Krishna, they remember what they heard from Garga Muni. They think about it for a moment. Garga Muni said, your son is not an ordinary child. He's as good as Narayan. So Garga Muni said that at the name-giving ceremony of Krishna and Balaram. So for a moment, if they come up, but it never sticks. It never sticks. They never stick with it. It immediately comes by that rolling, what is it called? Roiling? When milk is
rolling.
Anyways, that's another word I'm looking for. But the blade of grass goes down and just gets covered again. The same way that thought that Krishna is God won't stick. So Mother Yasoda, she may for a moment think that, but it doesn't last. She just always, Krishna is my son. That's all. And she never thought that, why does it happen? that this, I can't, she just thought, this is wonderful, this is amazing. And she would say, she said to all the other Kaupat women, she said, I want to see the extent of my son's waist. So in other words, she didn't think it. He was God. In her mind, this is my son. Okay. I think we can probably stop here. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.